Hey everyone, welcome to Seen That, the podcast where we talk about cult and classic movies we haven't seen until now. For our second installment of our summer series, we're discussing Call Me By Your Name and why Haley,
hi everyone,
hasn't seen that and much more. Hope you all enjoy. Well, so I think we mentioned this in our last episode, but congrats, Haley, on moving.
Yes, I am in my new place. It might sound a little echoey. It does for me in this room that has no furniture in it. So that's why if it sounds weird. But David and I have moved into our new apartment and we got it because it was much bigger than our place in Brooklyn, and we're so lucky to be here. But of course, we are like, oh my God, we have no furniture to put in it. So hence the echoey rooms and the no furniture. But we're really excited. It's been a long road, and I feel like the journey's only just begun on the decorating process, but that's the exciting part. So I'm excited to like finally be here in our new space, but it's definitely been a crazy past few days. We moved on Saturday, then it was, we moved on Friday. Sorry, that's how, addled my brain is. Went to the Botanical Gardens on Saturday, the New York Botanical Gardens that we had had tickets for like since January of 2020.
Wow.
So it's been a while because of, COVID, and they weren't letting anybody in. And now we finally got to go see this exhibit that we'd been wanting to see for like a year and a half. But we were out all day Saturday in the 90-degree weather, sweating our asses off. That was super exhausting. Summer is definitely here. Been scorching hot.
So hot.
On the East Coast, at least.
Yes. I mean, I do think the country is going through a heat wave. I could be wrong.
Okay.
Also, global warming is very much still a thing. So there's also that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been really hot. Crank the AC. You kind of can't move or do anything because you're just baking in your own sweat, effectively.
Yeah. Doesn't it make you just want to laze about on a field watching volleyball
or
whatever they were doing?
go to the river and,
go to the river,
listen to music,
sit under a peach tree,
transcribe music.
Yeah.
If you don't understand those references, we are hinting at the film we're discussing today, which is, again, Call Me By Your Name. And just some quick facts about that. It came out in 2017. It was directed by Luca Guadagnino. Guadagnino, we think the G is silent. My apologies if I am mispronouncing it. I did my best to look it up to make sure I got it right. It was, the screenplay was written by James Ivory, and both of them, along with a few other people, also produced the movie. And it's based off of a novel of the same name by Andre Akiman, I think is how you pronounce his name.
I think so.
And that came out in 2007. Sure. It stars Armie Hammer and Timothée Chalamet and a few other people, but I think we can all agree those are the main stars. They play the main characters in the film. It had a budget of $3.5 million and it grossed $41.9 million worldwide. And just a short summary, set in the summer of 1983 in Northern Italy, Call Me By Your Name chronicles the romantic relationship between a 17-year-old Elio Perlman, played by Mr. Timothée Chalamet, and Oliver, played by Armie Hammer, a 24-year-old graduate student, assistant to Elio's father, an archaeology professor. And you can find this and stream it on Stars, but you will need a subscription. I forgot that I'd canceled mine. And so I was like, oh, I'll be able to watch it. And then I just ended up buying it or renting it on YouTube TV, which is another place you can get it. Amazon Prime, Google Play, go down the laundry list of services. So it's available. Now, knowing how widely talked about and highly regarded this film was when it came out, It did receive 4 nominations at the Academy Awards that year, including Best Picture, Best Actor for Timothée Chalamet. He was the 3rd youngest nominee in that category, I think, ever.
Wow.
Yeah. He was only 22 at the time. And it won for Best Adapted Screenplay. It also basically propelled Timothée Chalamet's career and status as a heartthrob, I would argue. Yes. One could maybe argue the same for Armie Hammer, but he'd kind of already been well-known from things like Social Network and other movies. And because it takes place in Italy, why, Haley, hadn't you seen that?
I don't know. This was one of those ones that I really had been meaning to see. It was on my list to go see it in theaters. A bunch of people I knew, you know, our friends were like going to see it. I don't know what I was doing in 2016 that I couldn't go see it, but
2017.
Oh, it came out in 2017?
Actually, it came out late in 2017, but I didn't see it until 2018. So like,
oh, I thought it was released in 2016. No, you're right. It actually does say 2017 on here. Maybe I was reading about the filming and it kept saying 2016. Mm. And that's how I was getting confused. So
moving brain.
Sorry. Yes, I'm completely out of it today and this whole week. But yeah, I don't know. It had all the elements of like, yeah, like a romantic movie, like poetic, artsy kind of film. Like I had just graduated art school at that point, or I had been out for like a year ish. So it felt like something that I would go see. I guess Timothée Chalamet wasn't really on my radar yet at that point, but I definitely liked Armie Hammer's performance in The Social Network and maybe like one other thing I can't remember right now, but I don't know. I knew loosely the plot, and I knew it took place in Italy, and I've, you know, studied there. I've traveled there. So I don't know why I hadn't seen it before. I knew people were like super into it,
yes,
like almost like obsessive, yes, about it, or they like were completely avoiding it and like didn't like it or didn't like the idea of it at all.
It was kind of like polarizing. You're right.
Yeah. But like for the most part, I knew everyone was like, oh, like that is the noise. Like when mm-hmm. you say the words, call me by your name, everyone just goes,
they swoon.
Oh my God. Yeah. They like just are ecstatic about it.
So, orgasmic.
Yeah. So, but I really don't know what I was doing that. I guess I just, you know, was busy. I don't know.
I think to give you some credit, a lot of good stuff, at least in my opinion, came out in 2017. So maybe you were just, you know, busy watching other great movies from that year.
Maybe. I was also watching a lot of good TV. I feel like that was in like peak of like Game of Thrones, like before it got all bad. But anyway, you know, so I don't know. I'm making excuses for myself. Yeah. But I think I was just like maybe waiting for the right time. And, you know, now was the like right time. I guess it was one of those things, again, like we've said before, like maybe I thought I needed to be like in the right mood for it or something. But having watched it, I will say that I don't think you need to be in any kind of mood for it. I mean, I don't know, like some movies you really need to be in like a headspace. And maybe that's what I thought I needed for this, and wasn't true. It was, I'll dive into it later, but I thought it was light and I didn't think I needed to be in like a very heavy, concentrated headspace for this.
Yeah, you don't need to buckle in. It's a great ride.
Yeah.
To keep going with that metaphor. But yeah, I agree. I don't think you need to be like, okay, I'm going to watch Call Me By Your Name. Because like you said, everyone swoons if they liked it and they've seen it. They swoon when they...
They do swoon, yeah.
You know, and I think that encompasses a lot of things. It's like the love story, the lush landscape of Northern Italy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the music.
The sexiness.
Yeah, it's like a whole vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was dating someone in New York at the time and saw this, like, basically when it came out. So, like, sometime in January, I went to the theater. It's one of the only movies I've seen on my own. And I actually really enjoyed... Yes, I like this movie.
Oh.
But I think there's something to be said about seeing a film in a theater by yourself. I really loved that experience. And, you know, it wasn't like I was the only one in that theater, but something about just kind of being on my own and watching this movie and having it sort of to myself in a sense, I really kind of liked. So I think that added to my liking of it when I saw it at the time. And even though I literally watched it alone again for this podcast, it definitely had a different feel to it. And I think we could talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, I think that was just sort of like kind of serendipitous. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go and watch this movie. Everyone's buzzing about it. You know, I've got nothing else to do, so I'm just going to go see it. But I think kind of like you know, it's easy to sort of get caught up in other stuff and other great content. So I probably would have been in the same position as you. But now that you have seen it, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, I really liked it. I don't know if I'm in like a swoon place, but I think that just comes from my, maybe this is a hot take, my like indifference to Timothée Chalamet. I think he's No.
I'm kidding.
Okay, hear me out. I think he's a great actor. Yep. I really do. But like, I almost think he's like too statuesque looking to like be hot. Okay, this is getting very like personal opinion, and I'm not shitting on Timothée Chalamet, but he looks literally, which is probably partially why they cast him in this and why they had that opening intro of all those Italian sculptures. He looks like a statue, and
that's a really
his
good point.
Jaw literally looks like it was chiseled, and you know, he's really gorgeous and interesting to look at, but I don't know if I ever would be like, oh my God, Timothée Chalamet. Like, it's not, like, for me, I would swoon if I was watching something with, like, Henry Cavill in it. Mm. But, like, Timothée Chalamet, not so much.
People swoon when they talk about Man of Steel, I hear.
Yeah, I mean, kidding. I barely remember that movie.
I'm totally joking. I feel like that movie is not good.
I think that's the only reason why it did so well. Is
yeah, he was in
he
it.
Was in it. But anyone wanting to watch anything better of Henry Cavill's, watch Witcher. It's fantastic. And
I've never seen that.
Just worked out so much for that. And it paid off, all I'm going to say. Okay, anyway. So that is why I'm not swoony about Call Me By Your Name, at least after this first watch. I feel like it is a film, though, that I found myself really, like, wanting to watch again. I was like, I kind of want to watch it again to just for the art of it. It's like it felt like going to a museum, and it felt like something that I hadn't done. Obviously, I hadn't really gone to a museum in a long time, but it felt like that. It felt like I was viewing like an art piece, and I like respect it for that. And I love the cinematography and just the, like,
it's beautifully shot. Yeah.
Beauty of the shots and even the dialogue, like the way that certain moments unfold, I thought was really poetic and like lovely, but also in a weird way, like really honest and realistic. Like, I felt like, you know, in movies, at least a lot of like coming of age films, there's a lot of like drama, or there's a lot of, I don't know, people don't really like say the things they're thinking a lot in movies, or like problems are like much bigger than they need to be. It just felt like each character was kind of being like almost honest with each other without saying a lot. And in those moments, you kind of go like, oh, I remember when that happened, when I was first dating so-and-so, or when I fell in love with this person. Like, you kind of go like, oh yeah, you don't really need to like say certain things. It's just like watching that unfold, like, is also very nostalgic, which is why I kind of like it as well. It's very like, you just think about times, even when you're like much younger, when like you're kind of naive and don't really know certain things, but like even just like trying to feel out if someone likes you, and you like might like touch their arm, or like you might like kind of playfully, like, I don't know, not hit them, but like, you know, kind of like find ways to like be around them and touch them,
or not be around them because you like them. And like,
yeah,
in a weird way, I've definitely done it, of like distancing yourself.
Yeah.
To sort of like, I think, check, do I really like this person? But also like, what if they don't like me? I need to like not get feelings.
Yeah. So I think all of that was just so like real in terms of just like the little things that make falling in love or even just having a crush on someone mm-hmm. so like emotional for a person. And I thought that they like did that very, very well from the script to the cinematography to the acting. I mean, Timothée Chalamet steals this whole movie for sure. And Armie Hammer did a good job, but I think without Timothy, this movie, like Armie's performance wouldn't have like landed as hard. It landed as well.
I completely agree. And, you know, I don't know. I'm like struggling right now to think of a lot of actors off the top of my head. So I'm sure there probably were other actors in contention for this role of Elio. But, and I think also the fact that it really did propel Timothée Chalamet into full on heartthrob, you know, superstar status overnight. I really can't picture anybody else playing this role. It really does sort of just seem so tailored for him. And I know that's not actually how it went. I mean, I don't think it went that way. I'm sure he auditioned, but I so associate this movie with him that it's really hard for me to think of anyone else playing that role. And I agree that like this movie really kind of, he holds it all together.
Yeah. Yeah. He did a fantastic job. And there's other, you know, great supporting actors.
Oh, yeah.
In this
the
film.
Dad.
Oh my gosh. What's his name? He did a fantastic job. And the monologue at the end.
Yeah. That always gets me.
Oh, Michael Stolberg. I might be pronouncing that wrong.
And the mom.
Yeah, the mom and Esther Gorell, who plays Maurizia.
Yes.
She's like gorgeous.
Yes.
She's just really like honest and just her like standing there with the bicycle being like, I don't really know like what to do. Like, oh my
God. I've been there.
She's fantastic. It's like we've all been there or like been close to that or been in situations like that. And it's just so.
It's so relatable.
I just appreciated though too that like, even though there was, I guess, essentially that like tension between Elio and Maurizia, like there was never like she got hurt, but there was never like a whole like dramatic thing of like, you chose him or like, I don't know. It just like, it didn't need to like be that. And a lot of times in life, that's not how it goes.
Right.
Like it's just, and it's not about that one person. And you kind of understand watching this film that you're like, oh, like you were in this situation. Then this other person comes and then, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know.
There was no notebook. I wrote you a letter every day for a year moment, you know, like kissing in the rain. There was none of that like overly operatic, dramatic scene.
Yeah.
Which
I guess also maybe I thought it was going to be maybe like that somehow. Like I thought that it was going to be a love story and they were just going to like, it was going to be like all this passion and all this. And like, there's some of that, but like, it's more like silly and playful than I thought it would be.
Do you think that's because it was so highly regarded? I mean, it is still, I'm not saying like the, you know, critical praise has died down by any sort, but do you think at the time you thought that because of how much it was getting talked about and how much buzz it was garnering?
Probably. I feel like I can't remember, but like maybe on some level I was avoiding it for that. Like I didn't know if it was just going to be like
a sappy love story,
like a Notebook type movie. Mm. Or there was another movie that came out, I think maybe around this time, or maybe I'm getting the timelines mixed up, but it was this one. And then there was You Before Me, with, Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. And I forget the other actor's name, but it was basically like, and then that other movie with, Ansel Elgort and, Fault in Our Stars, which I never saw. Like
you never saw Fault in Our Stars?
No, I know.
Oh my
gosh. Maybe I'm like avoiding it because I think it's going to be like.
That would be an interesting scene, that
like,
episode.
Too like.
Sappy.
Too much or something. I don't know. Or like, I'm like, man, it's like not real. Like no one, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Go ahead.
But yeah, maybe that's why I was like avoiding this on. Maybe I was avoiding this for those reasons.
You didn't want to catch feelings for the film.
Maybe. Maybe. Or just, I don't know, like sometimes when the stories are like so like choosy, I just.
Yeah, no.
I can't. Like, I'm like this in real life too. Like, if anyone, you know, in the past that I was dating was ever like super cheesy about anything, I like would be like, ew, I can't. Like, it just brings me out of the whole like thing.
I think because I saw it so early into its release, I don't know, to kind of what you were saying, like sometimes when a movie or any kind of piece of art, one could argue, gets so much buzz, it can almost feel like it's overkill. Like, is this thing really worth all this praise? Is it really worth all this attention? And the amount of Instagram stories I saw of primarily women taking photos of reading the book Call Me By Your Name at some, like, cafe with their latte or cappuccino, you know, like, oh, rainy day, gonna, like, read up on this because I loved the movie. Like, that would have totally turned me off to seeing it, which is unfortunate and, like, probably speaks more on me as a person than anything else. But the sense of just like when something gets just so much attention, it can kind of put people off. So I totally understand where you're coming from in that regard.
Yeah. And again, it was like the overly, like the sense that it maybe it was going to be overly sappy or something because it was on some level a love story.
Right.
And why I love this movie so much is because it's so not that. Like, there are elements, but it's not cheesy. It's not dripping in like there's no ew factor. I found it very, very not ew and very not cheesy and just very realistic.
Not chuggy.
Even though it was like still kind of fantastical, like, and in like this sort of, you know, summer Italian bubble, it also felt realistic in some way.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Well, yeah, and like speaking of the, you know, the love story that we both sort of thought maybe beforehand might be a bit overdone, at least over portrayed, but luckily, thankfully wasn't. What did you think of the fact that it was this love story between two males is portrayed by two straight actors? Which is kind of a similar conversation we had about Milk, because a lot of that cast was straight actors.
Yeah, I think I may have said it in our Milk episode, but I feel like the craft of acting, like there, in the craft of acting, there shouldn't be any, you know, restrictions on who gets to play what. And that is also me saying, I feel like more men can play women and women can play men you know, people can play people of different sexual orientations. Obviously people can't play people of different races or ethnicities. But I feel like as we're, you know, learning about sort of how kind of fluid gender is, I just feel like if you're playing, you know, if you're acting in a role, you could, you know, act almost as anything and anyone with restrictions to me on, race and things like that. But yeah, I do get though that there is, an issue with, you know, time and time again, having straight actors play gay roles because they're taking the opportunities away from people in the LGBTQIA plus community. And that is the issue. But, you know, once, you know, this is like, it's all a little bit theoretical and, you know, maybe a little hopeful sounding, but like when we've reached that point where it is more equal, I think it will sort of be okay for like things to kind of flip. And I guess like, cause gay people have had to like play straight people for so long, so that when finally like gay people get like their stories told, it's not, you know, their people playing them.
Yeah.
Somehow that does also feel wrong. But then I go like, well, you know, Timothy, like, did a really good job. Maybe Army could have been recast, but, you know, I don't know. It's a little bit complicated, but that's sort of at least my thoughts on it. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this as well.
I don't have any.
None.
I asked the questions. No, I think you said that really well. I'm sure there is criticism out there about it not being, you know, these actors, you know, not identifying as anything other than straight, and that, you know, they're playing, which I think is an interesting question too, of like, I haven't read the book, so if there's, you know, more context in the book that I'm missing, I fully recognize that. It doesn't seem like this movie is trying to label these characters as gay.
Right.
So, like, there's also that question of, you know, maybe they're not even identifying as characters in this film as that. And that's not really the point. It's just that these two people had a connection and had a love that, as the end of the movie shows, like, still is there and, like, has, you know, profoundly affected them. But that, you know, the label of them being gay, I feel like, was talked about so much in the buzz and the press about the movie. So
yeah,
if that is how these characters identify, then that's just something, you know, I don't feel like is blatantly obvious in the movie, at least. And I think that's okay. That being said, there's justifiably, I'm sure, you know, people upset about the fact that it was played by straight actors. But I think to your point too, you know, I do think this movie is a great film. And I think the performances were great. And I think it seemed to me there was more of an issue with the age difference of the characters themselves and less about the fact that it was played by two straight actors, which is something I don't know if you had any thoughts on.
Yeah, I did. I think maybe at first I was like, okay, what is the intended age difference? I guess in the film you said he was 17 and then 24.
Yeah.
In real life, I think, I mean, they do have a big age difference in the real life as well. But it didn't bother me as much when it was unfolding. I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, you know, you're sort of taken on this journey as, like, almost like part of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, relationships look different on the outside than it does to the people on the inside of it. But yeah, I think the only time I was, like, a little uncomfortable with it was, like, I guess maybe there was a couple lines, and maybe in that volleyball scene when Armie Hammer, like, kind of is, like, massaging his shoulder and then he, like, moves away. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, oh, like, maybe he just doesn't want you to touch him right now.
Or, yeah,
like, he's, like, processing. That felt a little icky. And I get, there was, like, maybe one other thing, like, in some of the phrasing of how they wrote Army's character or how they wrote Oliver, he kind of almost, like, talks down to Elio and is almost, like, being, like, parental or, like, a mentor in a way, like, sort of also teaching him, like, you know, like, there's that one scene in the lake where he's like, are you really that afraid of, like, what I think? It sort of had this weird, like, you know, dynamic of, like, Elio really looks up to him.
Yeah,
and then,
like, kind of like a big brother almost.
Yeah. And again, that's not to say that that type of dynamic doesn't happen in, like, relationships of people the same age.
Right,
but,
right.
Like, I get why people, I guess, I don't know. It's a tough thing. 'Cause in my mind, like, I get that, like, a huge age difference, like, makes people uncomfortable. But, like, to me, it was only 7 years. And it wasn't like Elio didn't also, it wasn't like it was non-consensual. So that's where I find issue when people are like, well, okay, I think below, like, a certain age, like, I, you know, when it involves, like, children, I agree that's, like, you know, they don't really understand what's happening.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, like, if you're beyond the age of, I guess, you know, I know the, like, actual age is, like, different in all countries, but, like, to me, if you're beyond the age of, like, I'd say, like, 16, like, you, and you're not inebriated, you can kind of, like, understand what's happening or give consent at a certain point. So I don't know. I just felt like people were getting all up in arms about the age difference. And I kind of go like, well, yes, but like, I don't know. And then I feel like, you know, there's tons of things where like the guy marries a younger girl and like no one has a problem with it. So like, I don't know. I just get like, it's a touchy subject, but I feel like, again, if you're over a certain age, to me, and the character was not like inebriated in any way or like persuaded, like it was obvious that Elio also had feelings for Oliver, as you know, on his own, like without Oliver having to like persuade him in any way, you know?
No, I agree. This is like, it's a gray area in a sense. Cause I think for me it's, and I've honestly been thinking about this a lot, not even because of this movie, but because I'm watching Love Island UK season 2.
And, stop. Oh my God.
And there's a couple that where I'm at in the season, there's a couple that the female is 19 and the male is 28. And to me, that's a big age gap. And it's what it comes down to is, you know, yes, this woman is 19. She's of legal age. So is this male. There's really nothing that says they can't get together. But to me, it's about maturity, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's sort of why, for some people, they don't think of Elio as 17, because he's so precocious, he's so mature, he is so wise beyond his years, that he kind of doesn't seem the actual age that he's at. And I can understand some people being like, you don't actually need to hold, you know, yeah, he's 17, so he's still technically a kid or a minor. And I think that should be taken seriously. But I think in the movie, he is frankly treated like he is an adult. He's smoking, he's drinking, he is, you know, dating. He's doing a lot of stuff that like I was not doing as a 17-year-old. And, you know, so he just kind of has this presence of being an adult. And so I think that sort of makes things between him and Oliver feel on a more equal-ish, not completely, of course, but on a more leveled playing field.
Yeah, I will say though, that just based on looks alone.
Oh yeah, they look way different. Like, like age-wise.
Like they were, like, you know, Armie Hammer is more built, is taller. Mm-hmm. He looks like a man. He has that, you know, voice that is, I can't even do it, but I'm gonna put on my like fake man voice. He has the voice of a man. And so, and Timothée Chalamet is like tiny and he looks like he's 12 all the time, even when he's like 25. So like there is that aspect where I get that, like that may have exacerbated the issue just by their looks alone.
That is true. Yeah. The physical presence of both also, definitely is a factor.
Because I mean, we assume that Maurizia is younger than Oliver, but we don't really know. She could be a few years older than Elio.
Yeah.
And no one really had a problem with that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she was supposed to be the same age. Who knows?
Right.
But I mean, maybe they say it in the book. I don't know. I do actually want to read the book. I know we always say that and I never do it, but I do want to read the book now.
I do too. And I've got rid of Instagram, so I won't be posting a photo of it with the cappuccino at a coffee shop anytime soon if I do pick it up. But I feel like this is a nice summer movie to watch. I feel like that's also a good summer read.
Yeah. Ooh, yes. You know, take maybe it to the I will beach. Just read it over the summer. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Take it to the river in your Italian small town on your bike.
I know. While you're eating this gave me such like wanderlust. I was oh my God, I just want to, and it's just so, it looked just so nice, and you just like all the house is gorgeous, and also like what a life. Like,
well,
this is also like I guess part of the bubble, like the sort of privilege that like guess this professor and his wife, like I don't know what she does, but you know, they have this villa and they're just able to like
be
look at artifacts and I mean, I know it's in the summer, so maybe Elio doesn't have school or go to school. I don't know, but like
he's homeschooled.
He just like goes to probably he might be. He like just goes to the volleyball thing or goes for a swim and like he's writing his music. It's just so like that made me roll my eyes a little bit because I was just like,
yeah,
oh my God, it's like so.
No, that was a criticism I heard from both like people I knew, kind of going back to our like people either really loved it or they didn't. That was definitely a critique I heard from people and even from some critics of like, you know, this is like a Pinterest board come to life in a movie. You know, this is like Wanderlust on full display. And yeah, like you said, it's about two white men or, you know, two white people and enjoying their time in Italy. Like it doesn't, it can be relatable in some regards, but it's not, I mean, it's a very specific lifestyle that it's showing.
Yeah. That part I think was romanticized, but like, the dynamic of the relationship unfolding, I thought was very realistic, no matter like what scenario. But I guess like, yeah, they had the luxury of like bathing together in the river and like, you know, all of that.
Also, I mean, not to like bring the romance down, but it did occur to me watching, I take it, you know, for these characters, this is their first time having sex with another male. But it did occur to me, was there any concern about AIDS? And I am not an AIDS historian by any measure at all, so I probably have my years wrong, but that, you know, AIDS was definitely around then. I don't know how much of a, I don't know if it was a full-blown pandemic then, or epidemic then, but that was just something that, you know, did cross my mind that is not, that is nowhere to be found in this movie. And I could see how that would
also
totally take away from the romance and the, you know, discovery and the excitement and all that. And again, if that's mentioned in the book, I don't know because we haven't read it. But that was just something that kind of did cross my mind.
Yeah, because there is that other couple that like comes to dinner. Yes. And I did find it interesting that, you know, Elio's sort of almost acting like a kid, like not really sure how to like act with these. Like, I guess it's like.
And calling, you know, them Sonny and Cher.
Yeah, like friends of your parents coming over. He's like being a brat about it. But also like, yeah, I guess like there was a perception maybe from the dad and mom that like he had a problem with people being gay. And like, I guess he's just kind of figuring out like how to process that and how to like process that within himself. And also like we're saying gay, but like kind of using it loosely, to be honest, maybe he's like bisexual. There's no, like, he didn't obviously put a label on himself, so we don't really know.
We can't label him.
By pan, you know, whatever they would want. But, yeah, maybe he's kind of coming just to terms with, like, oh, I could like Maurizia and enjoy my time with her, but I also just found a connection with Oliver, and it doesn't matter that, like, he's a man. And, like, you know, it's just about the person.
Right. Harking back to our sort of, you know, this movie is an indulgence of sorts. And
yes.
Some of the criticism that went with that I heard was, and it's kind of fucked up, but this, you know, portrayal of these parents being so loving and accepting and unquestioning of Elio. Because I know at the end the dad's like, I don't think the mom knows, but I get the sense that she's picked up on that.
I was going to ask you, do you think the mom knows?
I think she does.
I will let you finish your thought because I had a whole like reasoning why I thought she knew.
That like that's not, you know, the case for a lot of people who, you know, do identify as gay or, you know, had sexual encounters with the same sex, and that, you know, that's nice and all, but that's not really how parents can be. I completely can understand that criticism. But on the other hand, I think it is kind of nice and refreshing to not have that conflict in this movie. It is sort of nice to just know that like the dad and the mom they love their kid. They love their son and they want him to be happy and they want him to, as the dad says, sort of like feel what they're feeling and try to understand and grapple with that because it's going to make them, you know, learn and be a better person.
Yeah, no, totally. And yeah, I agree. While it is awful if you know, one's parents don't accept them for who they are and who they want to love, that is a truth. And that has been not to say that it can be told in many different ways beyond now, but that has been told, and that has almost become like a stereotype whenever there's a gay character in any film or television show. And I do agree with you that it is like refreshing for it not really to be like an issue, mm-hmm. and not having, even though they were kind of sneaking around and keeping things private, I don't think it was necessarily because they were afraid that the parents would be unaccepting. I think they were just like, we don't know what this is.
Yeah, and I think it was more of like their own like fears and insecurities.
So, but that also felt like very real. Right. It's like, you don't know, like, you know, when, you know, you have your boyfriend over in high school or whatever, and, you know, you're like, the parents are like, shut the door, don't shut the door. It's like all that stuff is like very, you know, real.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree. It's like really refreshing. And like another example of a story like that, where it was accepting and actually it like had a very positive impact in the gay community and like resonated with a lot of people, was when I was, you watched Schitt's Creek, right?
Love that show.
Well, like basically because of how accepting the roses are of David and how accepting Patrick's parents are of him, it was refreshing for that not to be an issue. Mm. And it was just nice to see the love just be the, this sounds so cheesy, and of course, but it was just refreshing to see like the love be the love, like any other straight love story.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. And, you know, not taking away from anyone, anyone's personal story or experience, but, you know, that is also sometimes how people's stories go. So I think like across the board, everyone should be like a little bit more like understanding and respectful. And like, yes, it sucks that like some parents are not as accepting as others, but like it is also, I think, important to see the other side, because maybe it might change some parents' mind who like isn't sure about it. But if they see other parents like accepting it, even if it's on screen, mm-hmm. like maybe they won't like have like as much of an issue with it, or like feel the need that it's like a whole thing. Like it can be actually really easy. That might be sound like regressive, and I'm not trying to, again, offend anybody, but it can happen both ways, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think this also harkens back to previous conversations we've had, where like there's still a lot of LGBTQAI stories that haven't been told yet, but like this is a great addition to what has been put out there already. And like the fact that we can have a conversation, and obviously other people have too, about how this portrays this and that in regards to the LGBTQIA community. So just having that like other kind of portrayal, I think, is great. It's not all just like one way to make a movie or make a piece of art that portrays this kind of identity. I think that's a positive.
Yeah. I feel like we should talk about the nudity or lack thereof and like the sex scenes before we like wrap.
Yes. I felt a little uncomfortable when I first watched this movie, and I still felt uncomfortable watching it happen when I watched this movie again. The portrayal of Maurizia, that her mm-hmm. name, her getting naked, and that sex scene between her and Elio being a bit more explicit than the sex scenes that are really implied between him and Oliver. It's not maybe something we can answer, but it was something I thought about then. I think about it now of like, why does that need to be shown? And it's more in implied and subtle with Oliver and Elio.
Yeah, I did read that in Army and Timothy's contracts that they wrote in that they did not want like full frontal nudity shown for them. I don't know if that was, obviously, if it was in Maurizia's contract or the actress who played Maurizia's contract, I would accept, or I would expect that the director would respect that.
Right.
But the, you know, there's all that kind of legality of it. But, yeah, I think he and the other producer actually wanted them to be able to show more, because they were like, they being European were like, why do these Americans care so much? So that I was kind of like, actually, you should have, you know, I don't want anyone to like be forced to be naked on screen if they don't want to be, but I guess like that at least would have made this movie feel a little bit more equal in that sense. Because yeah, like we see so much of Maurizia and like none of, like, it's basically just them with their shirts off. Like, we don't even see like butts. Do we? Barely.
No. And I want to be clear too that like, I'm not looking for that. I don't need to see
it's not
nudity
needed
to like,
just, like
get the sense of what's happening in the scene or, like, I don't need that as a viewer. And so I think it feels a little imbalanced, I guess, from my point of view of like,
yeah,
this female, the only female, the only person who happens to be female that gets naked. Yeah. And everyone else is sort of like, you know, at least from a Western perspective, is as, you know, clothed or not as one would expect. So like that just doesn't feel equal. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, that makes total sense. This is an Italian director. It's, I think, an international film in that it was produced by both American, yeah, and European people. So I can, mm-hmm, imagine conversations of like, you Americans are so prude, happen. Yeah. So, and like, good for, you know, Timothy and Army for not wanting to get naked. Like, I completely respect an actor's, you know, decision, yeah, to be naked or not, or like show this or show that, like, or not. So I think that's totally up to the person and should be, like you said, respected. And I think it's great too that like intimacy coordinators are now being hired on film sets or TV show sets. I think that is long overdue, and I guess better late than never, but I'm all for that. It does come off, I'm still a little confused, like, what was the point of that scene? I'm sure there was a point, and I won't ever be able to ask the director that. Maybe I need to do more research, but I guess seeing that scene mixed with the other ones, it's a little confusing.
Yeah, that is true.
And maybe that's the whole point. Like, Elio's kind of confused still, and so he's testing things out. But again, like, the visual of, like, why are we seeing certain body parts and certain actions being done to bodies and not others? And not that that needs to happen with everybody, but it's really just the why of it all for me.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I didn't feel... like, I did notice the imbalance, but when those scenes were unfolding, I didn't necessarily feel, though, that the camera was like lingering in any weird spots. I don't know. I sometimes, when, you know, there's a sex scene, it's like only...
yeah, it's objectifying.
I guess. Yeah. I didn't feel like it. I didn't feel like the camera was being creepy, but maybe that's just, I don't know. Maybe on second watch, I will feel differently. Like, I feel like as women, and I'm not going to speak for all women, but like, you know, when, like, again, like we were talking about in Hustlers, and mm-hmm, even like that scene in Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
We felt very uncomfortable with that. But like vice versa in Hustlers, we were like, it actually, like, you could just feel it through the camera.
Yeah.
There
is a male gaze in this movie.
This for me was somewhere in the middle. It was like, maybe not as like freeing feeling as Hustlers, but it wasn't, it definitely wasn't as, it did not feel forced, like Do the Right Thing.
I completely agree. But there is a male gaze happening in this film. And I think it's a different kind. There's a different intensity, if there's any at all going on. I don't have the right words or probably critical eye to really dissect that here. And we're not, again, that podcast, but that is sort of, there is a gaze happening. And it's one we probably can't unpack, and that's okay. But I noticed that, and it made me a little, maybe uncomfortable is not the right word, but I question it.
Yeah. Instead of a male stare, it's more like a male glance.
Yeah. And there's honestly a couple shots, like not even just of the one scene between Maurizio and Elio where they're, you know, basically having sex. There's like other shots too that I'm like, why are we lingering on this, you know, damp and, you know, outside step? You know, there's a couple shots and I'm like,
oh yeah, that was weird. That one.
And like, again, I know there's a whole point to, like, there's intent in all of this. Almost every film has, you know, most directors have an intention of why they're shooting a shot, and why it's getting cut this way and why it looks this way. And I trust that wholeheartedly with this movie and this director. But yeah, there were a couple of shots and scenes that I, you know, does that really need to be that long? Does it need to even go here? Does that even need to be said a couple times? And I don't think that makes the movie bad. I really like this movie, but you know, I don't think it's perfect too.
No, it's definitely not a perfect film. I mean, so few are, but,
Hustlers. Yeah,
for everyone's like,
Hustlers is perfect.
Yeah. Very damn near. Yeah. for everyone's like swooniness of it, I feel like, yeah, it, there's definitely times where you go, okay. And then there's times where you're like, oh, that was really well done. And you know, it kind of is like, teeter-tottering between those for me like the whole time. Yeah, but overall I had a positive like viewing experience, and I watched it alone, and I feel like, you know, the story is very, in a way, personal. Like, it will remind, like, as someone's watching it, you know those moments and those feelings like that it's bringing up for you. And so I don't know, this movie just then has like a very, it's very like intimate almost then, if you're, when you're watching it, it's like,
I kind of had the opposite, or at least a different experience on this second viewing. I felt that way that you were just describing when I first watched it. And ironically, I was in a theater with other people, and somehow I felt like I was, you know, in a, it felt like an intimate moment watching this movie with myself. And
yeah,
I think it's a mixture of it being so fucking hot, my AC having to be blasted. I live in a small apartment, so like basically all my activities happen in one room, the same room. So it was sort of hard to hear, and it is a long movie. It flew by when I watched it.
It does kind of fly by, actually.
In the theater, but it felt longer on this second viewing. And I don't think I was in the best of moods. So I just think like external factors were definitely affecting me and watching this, but I did pick up on some new stuff, which like, yeah, like the gestures and the subtleties of how Elio and Oliver sort of do make it, known to the audience that they like each other. And like, that was like, those things were relatable, like touch or like icing them out, you know, icing the person out and like leaving notes. Like I definitely, related to that in looking back on when I liked somebody or when they liked me, and just, you know, how you deal with that as you get older and as you mature. So I think that is sort of like universal, which is a great aspect of this movie. But I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you had a good experience watching it. I would recommend this movie to our listeners, our Seen That listeners. Would you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's worth a watch. It's one of those ones that I'd say if you are wanting to watch a romance film, it's not a Notebook. It's
no,
it's more, and actually there are, I guess, other similarities that we could have talked about, but you know, we're trying to keep these short, but it's more in the like Moonlight, like on the spectrum between Notebook and Moonlight. It is definitely more towards Moonlight, I'd say. It definitely has an artsy foreign film vibe, and yes, I would say it's definitely worth a watch at least once.
Do you think this you know, was worth the hype? Like, do you think all the buzz it got a couple years ago, now that you've seen it, was worth it, was deserved?
I think it was really well done. I think the media, maybe looking back now, like how we've like even from a couple years ago have shifted our way of like talking about things.
At least culturally,
but
yeah.
But I think like the media has a way of like highlighting certain things that like we discussed, like the age difference, the straight actors playing gay men, I think, or, you know, sexually fluid men, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I think like certain things maybe turned me off to watching it initially. So I'd say like, I don't know if it lives up to, I almost think the hype was like not good for the movie. And I feel like for people who may have been turned off to it before, it is, I think, definitely worth a watch, because I think a lot of maybe what you've read or what you've heard about it almost isn't true, or it's giving you a warped picture of it. I'd say just watch it for yourself and like make your own decision. I definitely liked it and would watch it again. And it definitely like was different than the movie that I thought I was going to be watching. In a good way, in a good way.
I was just about to be like, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
Okay, maybe the last thing we can just say, like, do you get what the Call Me By Your Name thing is? I have to say, I still don't really get it.
I don't know why I thought it was something different. That, I guess, was one of the things where I was like, ugh. Like,
you wanted that. You had that built up more in your head as something.
Or like, I don't know. I guess I don't know what it would mean. But like, I just was like thinking about if someone asked me to do that. And I'm like, I just think it would be weird.
Yeah. Like, I can't tell if it's a sexual thing, if it's just like their thing.
It's like to me, it seems like I would be like, I'd have to be much more into myself. Like, to like, I don't know. It seems.
I feel like the book probably will give much more context to this. So maybe that's more incentive for us to read
maybe.
It.
Maybe. But maybe it's more like, you are me and I am you. Yeah. Like thing. I don't know. Like,
there's a good amount of ambiguity there.
Straws here.
Yeah.
But weirdly, there was a scene in the beginning when the dad said to, when they're talking about the etymology, the.
Oh, apricot.
Origins. Yes. And then he's like, it was referred to by a different name. And then I was like, oh, is that like going to like come back later? And it didn't. So I was like, okay, that I thought it was like something about like refer to like me as like a different name, your old name. Like, I don't know. I thought it was going to like, I thought that was going to.
That's really interesting.
Come to play. But it didn't.
So. Maybe that'll be the sequel if they ever make it. There was like talks too, like, literally, I think, okay, last thing about the hype of this movie, I think that also sort of added to some people rolling their eyes about it, because when they were doing press, Timothy and Army, for this movie, there was already talk about the sequel getting made. And it's like, hold your horses, pump the brakes. You know, this movie just came out and you're already getting, there's already talks about the sequel. But that being said, that probably happens all the time with like Marvel movies and DC movies and big budget films.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's not like, I guess, unheard of, but just it being talked about so openly, it seemed like, okay, whoa, it just seemed very sudden.
Yeah. It was like, whoa, this was supposed to be like an indie like art house film. Yeah. And now it's like,
right.
Yeah. I'm glad it's kind of just a one-off.
Right.
It doesn't need another one in my opinion. Although apparently this is part of a trilogy.
Yes. Which maybe they will, you know, I have to say with all the stuff with Armie Hammer, I don't even know if he's still canceled. If like, we obviously didn't talk about it, cause like, I don't really think we have much to say on it.
Yeah, we kind of mentioned it in our previous episode. We basically mentioned that we like acknowledge that stuff is out